Hello, hello, OdaFest podcast listeners. I'm Angelo, and with me today is Nancy.
Hello, folks.
Oh, my lord. Oh, my god. The 19th episode of the 11th season is here. And we have some news and announcements for you.
Boy, do we ever. Because Bryson Boggess is a voice actor, singer, and stage actor based out of Dallas, Texas. He is known for voicing many roles in anime and video games such as Shoyo Hinata in Haikyuu, Nagi Seishiro in Blue Lock, Falco Grise in Attack on Titan, Jeppard Lando from Honkai Star Rail, Belle Krennel in Is It Wrong to Try to Pick Up Girls in a Dungeon, Pegasus Seiya in Saint Seiya, Sherbet Cookie in Cookie Ren Kingdom, Takumi Aldini in Food Wars, and many others. For his full list of roles, check out BrysonBoggess.com. And if you'd like to keep up with what's going on with Bryson, give him a follow on Twitter/Instagram/TikTok at Boggess Bryson. He'll be joining us as one of our lovely voice acting guests.
Wonderful. Yippee. Oh my god. I am actually familiar with a few of these roles. I know Belle Krannel from Is It Wrong to Try to Pick Up Girls in a Dungeon?
And I know Takumi Aldini from Food Wars because he was so passionate.
And I'm very familiar with many others. A lot of voice actors seem to have taken that role.
It's very exciting.
Oh my god. I think I just... I bothered you on a very deep level with that joke. Oh my lord. The look on Nancy's face. Ooh.
Wow, you just said that. Okay, moving on. There's nothing else to really say. Is there?
Oh my god. Ah. So. While I'm out here being stupid, Microsoft is over in their offices being equally silly. Quite frankly, every day that passes is a day that Linux gets better and Microsoft just gets worse in every way imaginable. We just came out of January where multiple patch Tuesdays caused things from file loss to not booting to many other issues.
Jokes on you. My Windows machine has had trouble booting for like 2 years because it decided that it wasn't going to understand how the boot up sequence worked. It's a toss up every time I open the silly thing.
God damn, I'm so sorry.
And if people wonder why I don't stream anymore, that's the reason why.
Oh, I would say get a new computer, but goddamn.
Getting a new computer parts these days is an exercise in watching your wallet be empty.
I'm pretty sure if you just had a fire hose of dollars, it wouldn't be able to keep up with the inflation of RAM these days.
Ouch.
Literally.
But anyway, so Windows, tell me about these patch Tuesdays that have caused the inability to boot.
So this was, I believe, just this past week, where people, under certain circumstances, the operating system install would just no longer be bootable. Clearly, it must have been either messing with the bootloader or possibly some of the kernel files. I actually didn't look that far into it. I saw the headline and I was like, yep, that sounds like Microsoft these days. They're getting real comfy up with Copilot over there. Yippee.
Oh, no.
And so I did. The only reasonable thing I started looking into replacing every single workflow that I have on Windows under Linux. It's been about 2 months now that I've been running Linux on my laptop. And to be perfectly honest, it is not a smooth experience. And I say this full well knowing that I'm a pretty savvy user. I'm not the most experienced Linux user. But as far as someone transitioning from Windows to Linux goes, I'm definitely one of the best case scenarios.
Okay, tell me more. Tell me about best case scenario.
So, for one thing, I know that I know how to use the Linux terminal.
Uh-huh.
Just straight up. I'm very comfortable in a Linux terminal. I am mostly comfortable installing things from package managers. Quite frankly, as soon as you have to install something that isn't in a package manager, things get a little bit hairy. I believe I spoke about my trouble with DaVinci Resolve under Linux on the podcast before.
Mm-hmm.
Which, in and of itself, is, good lord, just a reason to give up video editing on Linux just about. But. Taking a step back, one of the most fundamental hobbies I have is streaming on Twitch. And so I wanted to take a look and see, okay, if I tried to do this, if I tried to install Linux on my desktop, what would actually be the stumbling blocks for me? And obviously that started with OBS. OBS is by far one of the best pieces of open source software in general. One of the best media open source softwares on top of that. It is an incredibly useful tool. And it is...
I won't disagree with that.
So simple to use on Windows.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So for people who have used OBS before, you would know that there's a couple of things that you might want to do under it. You might want to capture a window, like a browser window or a Discord window or a game or maybe your whole desktop. That's fine under Linux. That is super good, with a few exceptions. Another thing you might want to do is explicitly capture a game. Good lord. I didn't expect that to be such an adventure. I just thought it'd be built into OBS. I didn't think I'd have to go hunting for anything to make it work. Another thing is browser sources. Sometimes you'll want to use a browser source for, like, alerts, very fun alerts that pop up when someone follows or subscribes or does something in your channel.
Yep, that's a thing.
I didn't realize that would be a completely separate OBS package, that the base OBS studio had no browser alerts or no browser sources, that I had to remove the base OBS studio and download the version that included browser. I didn't know that was an option. I'm still flabbergasted that is an option. Good God. And so what I learned is that, okay, you have to make sure that you get the OBS Studio browser version. Okay. You have to go and install this other package called OBS VK Game Capture. The VK standing for Vulkan, because graphics libraries, huzzah! And then, to make the OBS VK Game Capture work, almost every program that you run, you have to run through a second program called OBS-Game Capture, which all it does is it flags the process so that OBS knows to look at it.
What?
Yes. Now, that wouldn't be a problem if the OBS window capture system on Linux, which uses a software stack called Pipewire, which does so much shenanigans, if that could capture a transparent frame buffer. This is a really technical thing. But in games, when you are drawing graphics to a screen, on the low level, they take a texture that they call a frame buffer. They draw everything to that, and then they draw that onto the screen. And something that's that a lot of games have ended up using is something called a transparent frame buffer, so that you don't have to do things like green screening or Luma keys or anything of that nature. You just get the transparent game thing. And I had multiple softwares that needed this. I probably spent 10 hours trying to figure all those out and get them working.
So you didn't stream for like a solid 2 days is what I'm hearing.
Oh God, no. I have not installed Linux on my desktop yet.
This is the prototype.
This is all exploratory work to see what I can do on Linux and see if it even makes sense. Because no matter what, there's going to be sacrifices made. If I start using Linux full time, that means that a lot of the time, like say a new game comes out, I might not be able to play that game immediately. Depending on the game, if it's like a multiplayer game or an online game, I might not be able to play it at all, depending on how the anti-cheat works. And so I want to figure out everything that I want to do before I commit, because I know that drawing and art and everything that I want to do there will work on Linux. I'm not worried about that part. I know that all of the game developing that I want to do, I know that that works on Linux. One thing that I'm not certain about, and this is probably going to be something that trips me up, I don't know if I would be able to record the podcast on Linux. Quite frankly, I actually do edit the podcast on Linux frequently because Audacity is right there.
It's true.
But the ways that I've had issues with DaVinci, the ways that I've had issues with OBS, I wouldn't be surprised if I installed Linux and then suddenly, for whatever reason, my Volt 276 interface just stops working. I would not be surprised if that was the tripping hazard. You know what I mean?
The better news is that newer stuff has generally a lot more Linux support these days, but that's still not something you want to have to deal with in the case of emergencies.
Exactly. Like, one of the nice things about Linux is that, for the most part, you can do almost everything that you do on Windows. The downside is, you might spend 8 to 12 hours or more trying to figure it out. Your best case scenario is that it just works out of the box.
The worst case scenario, though.
So, as an example, one software that I use is something called VTube Studio. Many people listening might understand exactly what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And it is technically a game. It is a game that is developed on top of Unity, a very common game engine. Almost any Unity game just works, especially if you install it through Steam.
Okay.
Super good. Super easy. There is one feature of VTube Studio that simply cannot work on Linux on its own.
Uh-oh.
And so one thing that VTube Studio does is it uses your webcam to look at your face and then maps what your face is doing onto, like, an anime character. It's very fun. Mm-hmm. Give it a try sometime.
It's very adorable.
Under Linux, the way that webcams work are just so different that you cannot translate the Windows instructions into Linux instructions. Now, VTube Studio is a very smart piece of kit. It has a way around that. The face tracking system that it uses is something called OpenCFace. Very good. It's open source software that sees your face. It's very well titled.
Uh-huh.
And, oh my God, wouldn't you know it, you can just download that separately. It runs in Python, and Bob's your uncle. It's supposed to just work. It doesn't work. It doesn't just work. Oh my God. I thought it was going to be so easy.
This is a man who has been betrayed by false promises of plug it in and it'll just work.
Yeah. So one thing about Python is that Python developers love using other people's work, which is, to be fair, really good in the programming world. Programmers say that sharing is caring unless you work at Microsoft or Oracle or any of the other blah, 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 blah. You know?
Okay. All right. I'm going to let that comment slide.
I mean, Microsoft and Oracle and all of them love using other people's work. They just don't like sharing their own work.
They like buying other things.
True. True. God, that's its own conversation.
Yeah, let's not go there. So, okay.
So, I have to go and install dependencies.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
this
you
is
do.
Normally really easy. The command is literally pip install and then the name of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I do that.
It does all the things, yes.
I do pip install these three things.
Mm-hmm.
And pip says, I have never heard of this in my fucking life.
Please tell me you pulled down a list of the current catalog of things.
It turns out the things that I needed to install were only available for a version of Python from like 5 years ago.
Oh, so older Python, gotcha.
Yeah. This is a fun thing about the Python programming language. It breaks itself, even in minor updates. Python 3.9 is not compatible with Python 3.10 or 3.12.
That's a side conversation too. So, okay, so you've had problems with Python versioning, and then what?
Well, that's the great part. So, because Linux developers are very smart, you Google this problem, and you get about 1,000 different solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Because developers, they love making a new solution, and instead of having one solution that works for everybody, you have 1,000 solutions that probably any individual one doesn't work for what you're trying to do, but one of them are guaranteed to work. Under Arch Linux, the variant of Linux I was using, there's this very useful tool called PyEnv, or mm-hmm. Python Environment. And with this tool, you can go into a folder and you say, hey, you, folder, you now only know that Python 3.9 exists. Never even speak the name of any other Python version. And so with this, I was able to get the libraries I needed installed. I was able to run the program that I needed to do. I was able to finally get one out of about 5 different things I needed to stream running after like
Yay.
12 hours.
1 out of 5. Done.
Oh, God.
So as a software developer in my day job, this is something that we deal with a lot. PyEnv was created to literally be something that could be a drop-in, right? This is a whole box. Here you go. This should have all of the things, all the bits, all the tools you need to build the thing inside of it. It's like buying IKEA furniture. You should be able to take this whole box home, and all the things you need to build it are already in the box. So it sounds like you figured out the box, and it sounds like you figured out how to unpackage and make sure all of your pieces were there.
Yes. And to its credit, once I figured out the PyEnv stuff, and once I figured out how to add all of what was required from there to my path variables, which on its own was another adventure. Yippee. Normally, I don't want to get into path variables. Let's not get into path variables.
No, we've had to divert from like 14 tangents so far.
I don't want to get too technical, and I feel like I'm already there.
Well, if you were to summarize where you're at with this problem, where would you say you are?
I am now, like, 90% of the way there. At this point, the only thing that might be a stumbling block is a streamer automation tool I use called MixItUp. I do have it actually working under Linux. It showed some weird behavior, so I don't know if it's 100% good. But it's to the point where there were multiple times today where I was feeling a little bit wishy-washy, feeling like, do I just say goodbye? Do I just get rid of Windows? Or do I maybe use that second SSD I have that's currently a Steam drive, install Linux to that, get all of my other things going on a second hard drive? I can keep both installs in tandem here. That's an option. I feel like if I'm not running Linux by the end of February, it's because I'm either incredibly lazy or I actually encountered a non-negotiable issue. Another one.
I don't know. I guess we're just going to have to find out in one of the later episodes of this podcast how this goes for you.
I think the last time I went Linux only was 2016. So it's been a while.
Has it really been that many years?
Yeah. I remember what last time I was Linux only, Valhalla had just came out. And the reason why I stopped using Linux was because Overwatch was a really fun game and all my friends were playing it.
Oh, Valhalla. I love that game.
It was great. Wonderful game. Wonderful game. Anyway.
It has spawned off many personal projects that have been very delightful.
Yeah. That's been my week.
My week was mostly, for those who don't know, I've been working on some projects involving the release of Simuldub Anime, and my week was project management panic, and then, okay, everything's fine, and then panic, and then everything is fine, and then panic, and then everything is fine. So I've been going through a lot of ups and downs this week in terms of, like, where's my current stress level at? And it averages out to, like, a really nice low key, I'm doing good, but the highs are high and the lows are really low.
I told you this earlier. Nancy is the only person that I know who deals with high stress by getting another job. Quite frankly,
it's true.
You are going to have to relax before you end up with a fourth job.
I counted them. I have 5 jobs now.
Oh my God, I thought I was joking. I thought I was joking.
You thought you were joking, but you see, as I mentioned earlier, I stopped streaming because technical difficulties were just too difficult to overcome. And as much as I loved the little community I had grown, it just didn't make sense for me to keep streaming every week. So I took a break thinking, I'll get this stuff solved and put away. I'm just going to take the holiday to just, you know, focus on all the voice acting stuff, focus on some of the things that are happening in the day job, whatever. And then as time went on, I never went back to it. So eventually I just had to put it down and be like, I'm not a streamer anymore, or at least I don't feel like a streamer anymore. I participate on friend streams every now and again because that's fun to do. And pro tip, if you're a voice actor or wanting to get into voice acting, it's a great way to stay in practice.
Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic. However, I've replaced that job now with 2 or 3 other jobs.
I know you do voice acting. I know you teach voice acting. And you've recently spoken about how you work in project management in a production role for anime.
Mm-hmm.
You
yep.
are.
I'm currently overseeing 2 projects. One is a simuldub, and one is one of many up and coming video games. Like, really, to be honest, when you look at the video gaming industry, there are so many games that are, like, in development at any given time. It's kind of nuts. I always thought growing up that, you know, Square was only working on like 5 games at most at any given time. Like, no, they're not.
No.
You know, big gaming companies have so many things that they're spinning up at any given time. And it's a little wild because I was always under the impression that, like, you know, any big game development company is going to focus all their resources on like 2 games max, right? And that was 17-year-old Nancy. And now I'm not that sweet, innocent child anymore.
Yeah. Did you ever watch the anime Shirobako?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You're living that life now.
It feels like it, yeah.
Like, our main girl in Shirobako, she was an episode director.
Mm-hmm.
So, your role is obviously completely different. You're mostly managing...
I'm not a director.
To my understanding, you're mostly managing other voice actors, but what else do you do in your role?
Project management really is the name of the game, right? Like, any project... An anime series or any animation, really, if you look at just any animation production, any video game, even if it's something that's ongoing, like, you know, any of the Hoyo games or any, even like AFK. AFK is kind of like this ongoing, you know, we deliver new content on like a 6-week cycle. There's like new patches, da da da. Any ongoing video games, any games that launch as a single game and then maybe they go through DLC cycles. And this is something I got a little bit of a taste doing with indie games a couple years ago, just helping them manage the delivery of what they need. Project management is when you distill it all down. You need to ask the client in very specific terms, what do you need? When do you need it by? And then you work with your production team to try and deliver to that standard as much as possible. Because sometimes, like the project I'm on now, the deadline is kind of insane. Like, sometimes you're supposed to be putting together 7,000 assets that need to be delivered to a game developer by the end of a 3-week stretch.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So when you think about project management from the perspective of, I just need to figure out what the client wants. And sometimes, a lot of the time, the clients don't know what they want or they have assumptions about what they think they want. And it's your job to clarify what that is, because if you make the assumptions on their behalf and you deliver something they don't want, that's going to be rework on your part of it. It's going to be an inconvenience to everyone, because now you're also booking voice actors back again to redo things. You're asking your editors to do it again. It's a lot, right? It's a lot of wasted time. And if you are busy, if you're a really busy production studio, you don't have time to devote to mistakes. It's best to not make those mistakes as early as possible.
Valid. Understandable. My God.
Yeah, I have many jobs now. It's weird, but fun.
I'm glad you're enjoying it, because if you weren't, I would be over here trying to tell you to quit them.
You would be the first one knocking at my door, because you actually do know where I live, and you would be here and being like, Nancy, I made you takoyaki. You're only allowed to eat it if you promise to stop stressing yourself out by taking on more employment.
Exactly. You need to de-stress the old-fashioned way by just getting more and more and more hobbies, you know? Instead of getting paid, you just need to buy things, put them on a shelf, and be like, ah, yes, I'll get to that eventually. I don't feel guilty for not doing it. No, not at all.
So didn't we, like, several episodes ago talk about our guilty pile of shame, where it was like, here's my closet full of all the hobbies I started once upon a time and then never, ever followed through on?
Yes! I have the shameful hobby closet.
This can just go into that closet. There's plenty of space in there. I don't need to worry about this anymore.
Ah. Ah, that's fair. But one of my new hobbies, 3D printing, I am trying to keep up with it. I am trying to get my use out of it. Mm-hmm. I did buy a giant pile of filament because I knew the one roll obviously wouldn't do enough for me.
Uh-huh.
And I finally got through my first roll of filament.
How'd it feel?
It felt good. It felt like an achievement. I was over there being like, wow, there's only like 5 inches of filament left. I'll never use this.
That's really good. Yeah, I can't believe you like timed it so well.
Yeah. I was able to eyeball it. I think the last thing that I printed were these little clips that went on a roll of tape that included a little knife to cut the tape, and then the tape would stick to it to hold the thing in place. Honestly, incredibly useful. I ended up printing out like 4 of them for every roll of tape we had.
Nice.
Yeah. And that used up all of it. And one idea that I've been having for my 3D printer, it is something that has been on my mind ever since we went to NARA back in 2023. And we saw these gorgeous stone lanterns covered in moss,
mm-hmm.
and looking amazing. Mm-hmm. I wanted stone lanterns here in the house, and I want to grow moss on them.
Ooh, that's a great idea.
Now, I literally looked at what the cost of like a real stone lantern would be. And to be fair, $300 for a little 18-inch stone lantern isn't unreasonable, I don't think.
It is stone, then yeah.
Well, cement or something like that, right?
Sure.
They're not carved stone, but they're rock.
It's a lot of volume of stone, yes.
They're a heavy, heavy item. And mm-hmm. I was thinking about that, and $300 is a lot of money, so I ended up not doing anything. But, I mean, like $25 for a roll of rock-looking PLA is pretty cheap. And I'm pretty sure that I can just, like, put a little bit of, like, dirt on top of it. And once, like, the moss grows over it, that'll probably hold it in place. And if I just, like, spritz it with water, I mean, it's plastic. It's not gonna get destroyed by the water. It's fine. And I mean, the investment is low enough that, so I put the rock filament into my printer today.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been trying to dial in exact settings for it since.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that I tried was actually not the stone lanterns. It was a little planter. And I thought, hey, this should be okay. It kept lifting up from the print bed.
Oh,
it kept
that's
warping
bad.
Quite a bit. It was not living up to its potential. And so I started doing some research, trying to fiddle with settings. Eventually, what I settled on was, I clearly don't know what I'm doing. Let's just pick from the list of filaments in the system to go with one that's kind of like this.
I see.
Yeah, and that seems to have worked out a little bit okay so far, but not perfect. Not perfect. Mm,
I could get into a lot of things you could do, but maybe that's something we should talk about off podcast, because we already had one very tech-heavy, detailed
conversation. I'm sure it gets really dense. One of the things that I was seeing was that in a 3D printer, it has a hotbed, right? And that heats up to keep things like glued to the print bed.
Sort of, yeah.
I don't know the exact function. You could probably tell me.
So the heating function is intended to avoid thermal shock. When the plastic when plastic cools, like most things, it contracts, which can lift it off the bed. So if the bed temperature isn't hot enough for that specific filament to avoid the shrinkage that happens when it cools to a certain temperature, that's how you help maintain good stick to the bed.
Okay. So the filament that I bought says anywhere from 0 to 45 degrees Celsius. And so I just set it to 45, thinking, okay, this is probably good. And that's when it was peeling up and warping and having a really bad time. When I just picked a random filament from the list that seemed close enough, it actually set it to like 65 degrees.
Yep.
And it stuck to the print bed for the most part.
Yep.
It seems kind of good.
The default for PLA is usually around 65.
Yeah. So I don't know what their settings were. The next thing I need to do is figure out like the extrusion rate. I think that's one of my issues, but we'll see.
The temperature that you read off the packaging of your filament was probably referring to its stability.
No, which it straight up said print bed 0 to 45, deforms at 55.
I don't believe it.
Fair.
No, I don't believe it. That sounds like they mistook the labeling numbers for like, hey, this is a pretty good temperature for your plastic thing to sit at without it warping.
Valid.
Or for storage. It could also be storage temperatures.
That could be. Who knows? Like, it was kind of a discontinued thing to begin with.
Maybe
so
that's
we'll
why.
See. Maybe I just bought cheap, shitty filament, and I'm paying the price now.
But you know what I didn't do?
What's that?
I didn't buy cheap, awful ingredients, and nor am I paying a price for it, because I found out that they had short ribs on sale at Costco. So I picked up a package, and I made short rib stew. It was really close to like classic beef bourguignon, but I didn't do it quite that way because I didn't have the pearl onions and I didn't have specifically port or sherry to add to the pot. I just had like red wine. So
I think
close.
I think it
close.
Counts.
And it was delicious. I sacrificed my very rare lunch breaks that I get, because most of my lunch breaks are not actually lunch breaks, but for obvious reasons, and I do this to myself. I have 5 jobs. But I sacrificed my lunch break on Friday to go start this batch of stew, which involves browning the meat, cutting up some mushrooms, some carrots, some onions, and tossing it all into the pot, browning a little bit more, and then throwing wine broth and some extra seasonings, and then putting it in the oven in a big Dutch oven, and then just letting it stew for 3.5 hours. And by the time my afternoon was over, it was amazing. I shoved some potatoes in there.
I can only
let those stew for a bit.
Imagine what your house must have smelled like.
It was amazing. By about 1:30, I was just like, oh no, all I can smell is stew. I'm going to think about this all afternoon.
It's like pre-ordering the flavor.
Yep. Around 4 o'clock, I diced up some potatoes and I threw those in to start thickening it up and softening it. Because you don't want like overcooked potatoes in your stew. So you kind of throw those in the end.
Yeah.
So I threw those in. And then right around when it was almost time to serve, I threw in some peas.
Ooh.
And yeah, I had it ladled over a nice big bowl of fresh rice and it was so good. So
that
good. It was a perfect way to end my Friday.
Truly sounds heavenly.
It was a perfect way to end my Friday. And the sad thing was, is that if Angelo and my dear D&D friends were coming over for dinner that day, I would have happily fed it to everyone. But unfortunately, it was canceled that night because we have a sick household member.
Yeah.
So we should not be.
The plague I was suffering from 2 weeks ago, Dio finally caught it.
Mm-hmm. So, for everyone's health, there was no spreading of the plague. Also, I have voice acting sessions coming up this week. I don't want to get sick.
Exactly. No, we can't be doing that. But, unfortunately, that just means so much more delicious stew for you.
I'm going to have stew to carry me through for, like, 2 more days.
Hell yeah.
There's so much stew. I'm going to go back and get another batch of this for the next time. So I propose, actually, that we have some kind of non-eventful gathering. So a lot of the time I find that with friends, you kind of want an excuse to get together, like, hey, let's get together and play this game, or let's get together and go to the store because it's cool. But I want people to come over just so that we can feed them. So if we have like a pseudo cook-off type event where we just cook and then we just like force feed each other food for the event, I feel like that would be a really nice time to sit around, have food, and also catch up.
Hell yeah. That would be great. That would be so much fun.
What would you do for a cook-off if I challenged you to one?
Oh my God. So the problem is, I would have to make something that I could take from home, but most of the things that I like to cook are better off fresh. One of the easy things would be mac and cheese, because I can take it out of the oven. It is going to stay hot and gooey for like an hour. But if I want to do something like pizza, I need to basically prepare everything at home ahead of time, bring all the tools and be like, Nancy, I'm stealing your oven.
Which you could do. But I guess so in this case, in this hypothetical case, the great thing about stew is I can pre-make it and then bring it over and just heat it up again.
True. Stew reheats.
Stew is one of those things that are supposed to taste better the next day, right?
With stew, the potatoes in the stew will taste better the next day because they've had all night to soak up all of the juices.
Yeah, they're little flavor sponges.
I would argue that stew, I still think it tastes best fresh. Absolutely.
Okay. That's fine.
Pasta, on the other hand, absolutely tastes better the next day and is arguably healthier for you the next day.
Why is that?
It is something called a resistant starch. So this is something that pasta, rice, potatoes, almost any starch that you cook, when you cook it and then cool it down, a lot of the starches, a lot of the sugars and all of that, they turn into what is called a resistant starch, which your body cannot digest. And then even when you heat it up next time, those resistant starches stay resistant to the point where they almost behave like fiber in your gut.
Which is good for you. Remember, lots of fiber is good for you.
Yes. Now, I'm not saying replace all your fiber with frozen rice.
Frozen rice is the preferred way to store rice if you make rice and you have leftovers.
Oh, no, it is so it is a hack. Every time I'm cooking rice, I have started cooking 3 times more than I need. And then I'll throw the leftovers in the freezer. Oh my God, 2 minutes in the fucking microwave. And then I have perfect rice again.
Yeah, I do that too. It's amazing.
I'd been cooking rice incorrectly for the longest time because I'd been so meticulous about cooking exactly how much we need.
Well, now we know. So I've been doing the same thing. I've been making 1.5 to 2 times more rice than usual. And the only thing that I have a gripe about is that A, I now run out of glass containers a lot faster, and B, my freezer is now more out of space than ever.
I just use Ziploc sandwich bags. They hold about a good solid portion of rice for one person, for one Angelo-sized person at least.
I see.
It doesn't use up that much space extra. Unfortunately, it is plastic waste.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's why I use the glass lock with like the...
those are good.
Yeah, the snap-on lids. Those are great.
The Plus, other benefit...
you can heat it up in the glass container.
For me, I am... I'm usually just ripping the bag because I don't really care about resealing the bag afterwards. This is just... It is a bad habit to use too much plastic stuff, especially single-use plastic stuff.
It is bad. But I think I know what I'm getting you for next year.
Ridiculously convenient. It doesn't take up much space. It basically, when you're trying to take the rice out of the bag, you don't have to worry about the bag at all, or if it getting frozen into the container or anything. And then I just put it on the plate that it's going to serve on, microwave it, fluff it up, and it's perfect.
It's pretty good.
Why must being a wasteful jerk be so convenient?
I think that's the whole point, is that plastic waste is convenient, and that's why it's become such an epidemic.
It truly is. It well and truly is. I think my biggest issue is finding small enough things. For example, I have actually found very small little plastic containers that are good mm-hmm. for like vegetable dip. And they seal mm-hmm. closed, they screw closed with a thread, so there's no chance of them leaking.
Yeah, none of this plastic like snap-on.
On the other hand, I have never found a reusable glass or plastic Tupperware that are appropriately yogurt cup sized. The closest I've actually come are these glass molds for pudding, for cooking pudding in. And they do mm-hmm. have a lid on them. They do have a lid. The lid isn't perfectly waterproof. So what I have to do instead, I scoop yogurt in, and then I make sure to mix in a bunch of chia seeds, which absorb all of the liquid so that there's nothing to drain out. And it's unironically better. Yogurt with some good chia seeds in there, super good. Over the course of the day, waiting up to lunch, they absorb all the extra liquid. It becomes thicker. It becomes nice. The chia seeds are hydrated. 10 out of 10. But Dio doesn't like the chia seeds, and then the yogurt cup spills everywhere, and it's a mess.
Aw. Oh, adult life. So complicated.
It really do be. It really do be complicated sometimes.
But you know what's not complicated?
Waiting for next
week's podcast episode.
Let's go! Only a week away.
Only a week away.
Only a week away.
And next week, we half promise that Jay will be back.
I make no promises.
I said half promise.
Half promise. That's half lie.
Shh. They don't need to know that.
Bye-bye.
Take care.